The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles initially from the Harvard Health Letter and perhaps later from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And this is from the February 2024 issue of the Harvard Health Letter. And the first article is called Alert. This hidden condition increases heart attack and stroke risk. It has an unfamiliar name, produces few symptoms, and involves a cluster of health problems. But metabolic syndrome is a common and dangerous condition that's steadily increasing in adults of all ages in the United States, largely a result of the obesity epidemic. The syndrome significantly increases the risk for heart attack, stroke, diabetes, and more. What is it? Metabolic syndrome is a constellation of interrelated conditions. A diagnosis requires at least three of the following cardiovascular risk factors. The first is obesity. You have this risk factor if your waistline is greater than 40 inches for men or 35 inches for women, no matter your height, or if your body mass index is 30 or more. High blood sugar. After you eat, your body converts carbohydrates into blood glucose, a type of sugar that the body uses for energy. Sugar in the blood then enters your cells where it's needed to produce energy. In people with diabetes or prone to it, this process is impaired, raising sugar levels in the blood and damaging the cells and blood vessels. A fasting blood sugar level of 100 milligrams per deciliter of blood or more is considered high. Having diabetes, a fasting blood sugar of 126 or higher, also counts as metabolic syndrome risk factor. Next is high triglycerides. Triglycerides are a type of fat in the blood. Having a high level, 150 milligrams per deciliter or higher, increases your risk for heart disease and stroke. You can find your triglyceride level in your cholesterol test results. Next is low HDL. HDL is another type of fat in the blood. It helps remove LDL or bad cholesterol. If your HDL is below 40 in men or 50 in women, it's considered low. High blood pressure. Blood pressure is considered high if your systolic pressure is 130 millimeters of mercury or higher, or your diastolic pressure is 80 millimeters of mercury or higher. If you're already taking medications for high blood pressure, you should still count this condition as a metabolic risk factor. When three or more of these risk factors occur together, metabolic syndrome is present, and numerous studies have shown this means you have higher risk for heart disease and stroke. Having just one of the risk factors is bad enough, but having more makes the likelihood of bad health outcomes greater. That's why clinicians developed the term metabolic syndrome many years ago. It helped identify people at risk for cardiovascular disease and diabetes. Today, we have even better risk calculators, which take other risk factors into account, like age and activity level. But you can still pay attention to metabolic syndrome as a way to recognize that trouble is brewing, says Dr. David Nathan, a Harvard Medical School professor and the director of the Diabetes Center and Clinical Research Center at Massachusetts General Hospital. Metabolic syndrome also increases the risk for developing liver disease, kidney disease, or sleep apnea, a condition marked by pauses in breathing during sleep. You can measure your waist to see if you have at least one metabolic syndrome risk factor, but you can't see the others, so perhaps discuss it at your next doctor appointment and double-check your annual blood work results. The good news is that you can reverse metabolic syndrome. Losing weight is central to reducing many of its features. Lowering elevated blood pressure, blood sugar, and cholesterol levels also plays a major role in reducing your risk for heart disease and stroke. If you can do that and live a healthy lifestyle by exercising daily, eating a healthy diet, getting enough sleep, not smoking, and limiting alcohol intake, you'll not only decrease your risk for heart disease and diabetes, but also increase your odds of living longer. Now I'm going to go to a brief article, again in the Harvard Health Letter, and this is entitled, Will Walking Faster Reduce Your Diabetes Risk? A study published online November 28, 2023 by the British Journal of Sports Medicine suggests that picking up the pace of your daily walk, the faster the better, is linked to a lower risk of developing diabetes. Researchers pooled the data of 10 studies from the past two decades, representing more than 508,000 adults from around the world. Participants were followed for 3 to 11 years. Compared with casual walking at less than 2 miles per hour, walking 2 to 3 miles per hour was associated with a 15% lower risk of diabetes, no matter how long people walked each day. Walking 3 to 4 miles per hour was associated with a 24% lower risk, and going faster than 4 miles an hour was tied to a 39% lower diabetes risk. The study was observational and doesn't prove conclusively that lively stepping keeps you from getting diabetes, but we already know that brisk walking, like any aerobic activity that works your heart and lungs, helps you control blood sugar levels, weight, and cardiovascular health, which are all important for avoiding diabetes and many other chronic conditions. Now, next I'm going to turn to an article from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. This is the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of February 2024. And the article is entitled, Hysterectomy, What You May Not Know. For a long time, if a woman's uterus was causing health problems, and the woman was done having children or didn't want to have children, the simple solution was to remove the uterus through a procedure known as hysterectomy. This was done especially because other treatment options were often limited. In the past, hysterectomy was used to treat pelvic pain or even as a method of sterilization. But in the 1990s, medical professionals began questioning whether too many hysterectomies were being done. There are now more treatment options for many of the conditions a hysterectomy addresses. More importantly, research has since shown that removing the uterus may have long-term consequences for cardiovascular, mental, and bone health. This means that, like all major surgeries, a hysterectomy should be carefully considered. Even so, hysterectomy remains the most common major surgery for women. For some people, the benefits outweigh the risks, making hysterectomy a wise choice. Why hysterectomy? In a total hysterectomy, a surgeon removes the uterus and the cervix. A supracervical hysterectomy, also known as a partial or subtotal hysterectomy, involves removal of just the uterus, leaving the cervix in place. Hysterectomy does not involve removal of the fallopian tubes or the ovaries, as these are different procedures. Removal of the ovaries and fallopian tubes is known as a salpingo-oophorectomy. In a vaginal hysterectomy, the surgeon removes the uterus through the vagina. The uterus also can be removed through small incisions known as laparoscopic hysterectomy, or through a larger incision in the lower abdomen called an abdominal hysterectomy. A robotic hysterectomy refers to a laparoscopic hysterectomy done with robot assistance. Which procedure is the best choice for you depends on factors like your reasons for having the hysterectomy, your surgical history, and your other medical conditions. For women of all ages, hysterectomy may be used to treat gynecologic cancer. Hysterectomy may be used when treating cancer of the uterus, cervix, or ovaries. It also may be used to address precancerous changes. Then there's uterine prolapse. When pelvic supporting tissues and ligaments weaken or stretch out, the uterus can sag into the vagina, causing urine leakage, pelvic pressure, or difficulty passing stool. Removing the uterus and repairing supportive tissues may relieve those symptoms. Before menopause, several other health conditions may be treated with hysterectomy. The first is uterine fibroids. These benign tumors in the uterus can cause persistent bleeding, anemia, pelvic pain, pain with intercourse, and bladder pressure. Hysterectomy provides a permanent solution. Then there's uterine bleeding. Hysterectomy can help when medications don't control irregular, heavy, or very long periods. And there's adenomyosis. This condition causes an enlarged uterus and painful, heavy periods. Most of the time, a hysterectomy provides relief from these symptoms. The relief can greatly enhance your quality of life and provide an improved sense of well-being. If you're worried about negative sexual impacts, don't be. Hysterectomy doesn't appear to negatively affect sexual function and may even improve it if it resolves chronic pain or heavy bleeding. Still, for many conditions, except in many cases of gynecologic cancer, hysterectomy is just one of several treatment options. In fact, over half of hysterectomies are performed in situations where other treatments are available, and about 40% of the time there's no evidence that these other treatments were attempted before the hysterectomy. A hysterectomy has immediate significant effects on the body. Before menopause, removing the uterus ends menstruation and the ability to get pregnant. If the ovaries are removed, menopause begins immediately. This is known as surgical menopause. After this abrupt menopause, classic menopausal symptoms like hot flashes and night sweats are common. For some women, these symptoms may be managed with hormone therapy. Hormone therapy is medication that contains sex hormones. It comes with its own benefits and risks. Your healthcare team or a certified menopause specialist can help determine whether hormone therapy is a good fit for you. There are also long-term implications of hysterectomy to take into account. These include cardiovascular disease. A 2018 Mayo Clinic study found that women under age 50 who had hysterectomies and did not have their ovaries removed had increased risk of unhealthy cholesterol level, high blood pressure, and coronary artery disease over an approximately 20-year follow-up period. Most striking, researchers found that women who had the procedure before age 35 were particularly at increased risk. They were 4.6 times more likely to develop congestive heart failure and 2.5 times more likely to develop coronary artery disease. The same Mayo Clinic study also found an 18% increased risk of obesity after hysterectomy in women under age 50. Obesity increases the risk of numerous chronic health conditions. Research has also shown an association between removing the ovaries and a higher risk of mental health conditions like anxiety and depression. A 2020 Mayo Clinic study found that women who had hysterectomies without ovary removal were 6.6% more likely to be diagnosed with depression and 4.7% more likely to have anxiety over a 30-year period after the procedure. Having the uterus removed at a young age, 18 to 35, was more strongly linked with these mental health conditions. Then there was osteoporosis. A large Korean study found that hysterectomy, with or without ovary removal, increased the risk of bone thinning osteoporosis. The risk was highest for women who had hysterectomies at a younger age. The ovaries produce the vast majority of female sex hormones. Experts once thought that removing the uterus while keeping the ovaries would have no impact on ovarian function. But the ovaries produce fewer hormones after removing the uterus, which may lead to earlier menopause. Researchers aren't sure why this happens, but one theory is removing the uterus results in less blood flow to the ovaries. For these reasons, it's important to weigh the risks and benefits when deciding about a major surgery like a hysterectomy, especially when other options are often available. Although there is no specific way to reduce these risks if you do have a hysterectomy, it becomes even more important to lead a healthy lifestyle. This includes maintaining a healthy diet, getting regular physical activity, in addition, working with your healthcare team to address other risk factors you may have, like high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, and reduced bone density. And then there is a short article that is interesting that's called Choosing a Pet for Your Health and Lifestyle. Pets are known to improve the lives of human family members. Not only are pets great companions, but they also can boost your mental and physical health. Most people can find a pet to love no matter their health concerns. Talk to pet adoption coordinators about finding a good match for your health and lifestyle. For people who are trying to lose weight or get more active, dogs can be especially great motivators for getting active. Find one that wants to join you on a walk, paddle, or hike. For people with depression or anxiety, pets can be comforting and provide a sense of purpose that contributes to self-worth. They can be loyal and loving regardless of what you are navigating. They also keep their owners on a schedule, which can be helpful for people with mental health conditions. For people with a weakened immune system, avoid pets that are more likely to carry germs or parasites, like kittens or puppies under 6 months old, reptiles, poultry, rodents, exotic pets, and sick or feral animals. For people with limited mobility, consider your limits when choosing a pet. It might be difficult to haul big bags of food or keep up with an active pet. Pets also can be tripping hazards, so train them not to push or pull, and train yourself to watch for them. For people with asthma and allergies, pets with fur or feathers can trigger itchy eyes and sneezing, so you may want to opt for another type. Alternatively, some dog and cat breeds, like poodles and Siberian cats, are less likely to trigger people with allergies. Now for a little change of pace, I'm going to go to Second Opinion. Again, this is in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. Question. I've heard ginseng is healthy, but how do I use it? And ginseng is spelled G-I-N-S-E-N-G. Ginseng is a plant whose roots have been used in herbal medicine for thousands of years. The varieties include Asian ginseng and American ginseng. These are related but different plants. Ginseng appears to lower blood sugar levels, moderate the body's immune system response, and help with fatigue related to chronic illness. American ginseng might help diminish cold and flu symptoms, and Asian ginseng is marketed to help increase energy, improve memory, ease stress and anxiety, and even slow the aging process. High-quality research on these benefits is limited, however. Short-term use of ginseng appears to be safe for most adults, but be sure to discuss any supplement use with your healthcare team, especially if you're taking medications or have chronic health conditions. Ginseng might interfere with cholesterol-lowering medications, blood pressure medications, and antidepressants. In addition, ginseng's side effects can include difficulty sleeping, increased heart rate, and decreased appetite. Ginseng can be taken in a variety of different ways. Supplement comes in capsules and powders to be taken by mouth. You also can use the whole root to add a bitter, earthy flavor to your cooking. You can eat the raw root, steam, saute, or air fry the root, boil pieces of the root to make tea, add pieces of root to a soup or stir fry, and add powder or chopped ginseng to smoothies. Ginseng also is available in serums and creams that are said to help protect the skin against inflammation and signs of aging. Supplements like ginseng aren't effectively regulated, so be cautious when choosing products. The next question is, my dog died before the holidays, and I'm still broken up over it. My friends say I should get a new pet, but I don't feel ready. Am I overreacting to their loss? And the answer is, you're not overreacting. The sadness you feel when a pet dies can be intense as that with any loss, because pets are beloved members of your family. Pets provide companionship and unconditional love. They also promote emotional well-being. While losing a pet is never easy, it can be especially hard for older adults because it may trigger memories of prior losses, increase a sense of loneliness, and be a painful reminder of your own mortality. As with other losses, it's important to acknowledge and express your grief. Over time, your pain will lessen, while joyful memories will stay with you. Here are some tips that may help. Focus on the happy moments. Try to remember joyful memories with your pet instead of replaying the last moments. Recall the happiness you felt when your pet greeted you after a long day, or played with a favorite toy. You also could review pictures and videos of your pet. Memorialize your pet. Bereavement rituals are common in most cultures because they are healing expressions of grief. You might create a memory box of your pet's favorite toys, spread their ashes in a significant spot, write a tribute to your pet to share on social media, or honor your pet's memory in another way that feels significant. Look after yourself. Taking care of yourself physically will help you to get through this emotional time. Eat a healthy diet, get plenty of sleep, and exercise to naturally boost your mood. Grief is a personal experience, but it doesn't have to be endured alone. Many people who have loved pets have experienced a similar feeling of loss. Reach out to friends or family members to share your experience. Social connections also help to reduce loneliness. After you've taken time to grieve, Finding a new pet may be worth considering, but only do so if you feel ready. Perhaps you're concerned about your continued ability to care for another animal, or the possibility that a pet might outlive you. If so, discuss these concerns with loved ones and consider your options. It may be that certain types of pet are a better match with your lifestyle. And here's just a brief discussion of saunas. Sauna use is considered safe for healthy adults. It's even believed to be safe for adults with stable heart disease, though it's best done in moderation. Caution is warranted for people with less stable heart conditions like unstable angina or recent heart attack, and for those with kidney disease, uncontrolled diabetes, or uncontrolled high blood pressure. It's best to avoid saunas if you're prone to low blood pressure. A sauna's effect on blood pressure could cause you to pass out. Also, avoid saunas if you are sick or if you have an open wound. It's a good idea to check with your healthcare team before using a sauna if you take medications or have any health concerns. You should always avoid alcohol in a sauna, as it can lead to dehydration, low blood pressure, heart issues, and injuries like burns. You should drink fluids, which can include electrolyte drinks. You should start with lower temperature and shorter duration. You'll still sweat, and you can learn what temperature and duration is best for your comfort and enjoyment. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.